little over a month ago, I was sitting in the waiting room at the dentist office, everyone's favorite place to be, when I looked over and saw a copy of Real Simple magazine. Now, I used to have a subscription to Real Simple, but I gave it up because it just made me feel bad about how unorganized my life is. And I just seem to come away every time of reading Real Simple thinking I just need more plastic bins in my life. So I gave up the subscription, but anytime I see a copy in a waiting room or at an airport, I enjoy looking through it. One of the things they do in Real Simple is do before and after pictures. You know, for example, they'll show somebody's really messy laundry room with kids' dirty shoes everywhere and backpacks, and then the after picture, which they bring in the experts and several bins from the container store. And they organize the whole laundry room, and suddenly it's all transformed and nice and neat. And I just love looking at that before and after. It's a typical technique that advertisers use, whether they're advertising Invisalign braces or paint colors or whatever it might be. Here's the picture of what it looked like before, and now see what it looks like after. I couldn't help but think about those contrasts between before and after as I read these verses from the book of Acts. Did you hear what Claudia read? How Luke, who is the author of the book of Acts, how Luke describes that first manifestation of the church. These followers of Jesus were of one heart and one soul. And they sold everything they had and pooled all of their resources and shared everything. And there was not a needy person among them. And great grace was upon them all. You remember last week, right? And Holy Week and all the events leading up to that? You remember what this ragtag band of followers looked like before, right? What happened? Well, on May 20th, we'll gather for worship and we'll hear the story of Pentecost. We'll go into detail and dive into that story of when the Holy Spirit filled those early disciples and they were transformed and the church was born. But up until that day, I'd like to spend the next few weeks just looking at the contrast between who they were before and who they were after. How resurrection power and the power of the Holy Spirit changed these followers of Jesus into the church. Luke tells us that they were of one heart and one soul. Well, you remember before, right? How these disciples would argue amongst themselves over who was the greatest. Even at the table of the Last Supper, some of them were arguing. You remember the story when the mother of James and John asked Jesus if one of her boys could sit next to Jesus on his right hand in the kingdom? And those other disciples didn't like that, and they got mad, and they were all jockeying for position. And now, after the resurrection, after the day of Pentecost, they are of one heart and one soul. Luke tells us that there was not a needy person among them. Well, that wasn't the case before. Those early disciples of Jesus weren't always interested in meeting other people's needs or even hearing about them. You remember that time when Jesus was preaching at the hillside and thousands of people had gathered? The sun started to set and the disciples realized, these people are going to start getting hungry. Jesus, we need to send them home. We can't feed these people. We can't meet their needs. But of course, we know what Jesus did. He said to the disciples, you give them something to eat. And a miracle happened, and all of them were fed. Or maybe you remember that time Jesus was passing through Jericho, and the blind man was calling after him, Son of David, have mercy on me. And the disciples tried to hush him up. Shush, Jesus doesn't have time for you and your needs. We got big things going. We got someplace to go. They didn't have any interest in meeting that man's need, but Jesus stopped and healed the man. Or the time when the parents were bringing their children and they wanted Jesus to bless their children, and the disciples tried to send them away. No, we don't want to meet your needs. And Jesus, of course, said, "Let the children come to me." But that was before, see. And now, after, this group of believers has among them no one in need. Everyone's needs were met, and met with generosity and compassion. And then Luke tells us that great grace was upon them all. Boy, they needed grace, didn't they? We know what they did. Peter denied Jesus. The other disciples deserted Jesus. Last week, if you were here on Easter, we heard Mark's account of the empty tomb where even the women, even the ones who were most faithful to Jesus, failed to tell at first. All of them had failed Jesus in some way. And yet, in those first days after the resurrection, the risen Christ appeared in their midst, and he said to them, "Peace be with you." And they were forgiven, and great grace was upon them all. And so after, when they are filled with the Holy Spirit in these very first days of the church, they were so grounded in how much grace they had been given, that people out in the world could look at them and say, "Great grace is upon them. Look at the grace that they offer to other people. Look at the forgiveness and mercy and kindness that flows through these Jesus people." So we have this glimpse of the very earliest church, this eruption of the Holy Spirit where the church was born. And it was beautiful. But it didn't last very long. It lasts for about a paragraph. Right in the next chapter, there's a couple, Ananias and Sapphira, and they sell a field, and they're going to give the proceeds to the church, and they do, but not all of it. And they hold some back, and they lie about it. And then in the sixth chapter, some of the groups within the church start arguing with each other because one group says, "Our widows are not being treated as fairly as your widows are. Yours are getting more than ours when the resources are distributed. We're not getting as much." And conflict erupts. And by the time we see the church in Corinth and Thessalonica and all, as the New Testament goes on, we see conflicts and factions and the rich and the poor, and people aren't sharing all of their resources. And so what do we do with that? Do we say to ourselves that this vision of the church in the fourth chapter of Acts is just a pipe dream? It probably didn't happen anyway. Let's just discard it. No. I think Luke handed down to us this account of the earliest days of the church to have before us a vision of who we're called to be. This is what it looked like when it first was born into the world. And even 2,000 years later, we who are followers of Jesus are called to be the church and to live into that vision with all that we have. So when it says they were of one heart and one soul, maybe we're not there right now. We've got a lot of division among Christians, in our own denomination, in congregations. But we are yet called to be of one heart and one soul. Our own founder of Methodism, John Wesley, said, "Though we are not of one mind, may we not be of one heart? Even though we disagree sometimes on issues of politics or issues in our world or what color the carpet needs to be, even though we're not always of one mind, is it possible to be of one heart?" It happened then. It happens. How can we live into that as the people of God? And there was not a needy person among them. We might say to ourselves, "Well, that's impossible. There's no way we can meet everybody's needs." Maybe not. But can we be a congregation of people where we are safe to name our own needs, to speak out loud where we are broken, whether our needs be financial or emotional or relational? Can we name those as a community of faith? And can we do all that we can to have compassion and to meet the needs of one another and the needs of our community. We can't do it all, but through the power of Christ, we could perhaps live into that meeting of the needs of the people. And when we hear that grace was upon them all, is that not a calling and a reminder to all of us to remember the grace that has been shown to us? To ground ourselves in how much mercy we have been shown and how beloved we are of God. So that when we look out into the world, when we interact with others, we don't interact with judgment. We don't pronounce who's in and who's out, but we respond with grace because of the grace we have received. It's a high vision that Luke offers us, and it may seem impossible. It's not real simple. And we can't just call in a group of experts to come and fix everything and make us into the perfect church. But it can be a journey that we go on together. We'll never get there if we just rely on our own willpower. If we just say to ourselves, we're going to meet the needs of everybody. We're going to be of one heart. We can't do that. But what we can do is open ourselves to the power of resurrection and the power of the Holy Spirit and trust that God can transform us and take us further on that journey than we are today. That the power of the resurrection can be at work in us that we might be Easter people, even here, even now. May it be so.